The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Nightclub at the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. It is Sunday, February 6th, 2011. Tonight's show is pre-recorded. Before that, on January 28th, 2011. And we have a very special guest tonight, Peter Joseph. But obviously, since we're pre-recording, we won't be taking calls tonight because the show will be long over by the time you hear this. I will be at Tom Brown's Standard Course in Santa Cruz, California, the legendary tracker, Tom Brown Jr., who has trained tens of thousands of people in a wide variety of skills, both in nature and in life. And I'll be up there participating in some very important work that we're going to be doing with him, so that's why we're pre-recorded today. And I should set the context for the background that we come into today before I bring on Peter Joseph, which is that as this program is being recorded, the Hosni Mubarak regime in Egypt looks very much like it's on its way out the door, as I've been predicting for a while now on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. It's a great state of uncertainty, and there's a lot of palpable tension in the air. It's one of those days when you sit by the television set and you watch CNN or whatever to watch events unfold if you're into what's going on and its importance in the world, with Egypt, which is a linchpin, and we're at a point of great instability. Many would call it, and I think Peter would agree, that what we are having is a point of systemic collapse, where everything in human industrial civilization is falling apart at once, and Humpty Dumpty is not going to get reassembled. So that's an interesting context and pressure. I will say that by the time you all who are listening to the show tonight hear it, I am predicting, and I'm saying this clearly, I've been saying this on the World News Desk, that Hosni Mubarak regime is over. This is playing very much like the fall of the Shah of Iran back in 1979. And that I would expect that by the time this show airs, it will have been announced that Mohammed El-Baradei, the former head of the International Atomic Energy Agency and a Nobel laureate, will have ascended to the presidency or as head of state in Egypt. But where we are now also is at a point where, with these protests having proceeded rapidly, if you will, like brush fire, from Tunisia, Algeria, they've spread to Morocco west, they've spread far southeast to Yemen, they have spread to Lebanon, and these are all riots triggered by food prices, food riots, which are some of the nastiest riots in the world. They were triggered by a series of immolations. The first was in Algeria, I think about 2 weeks ago now. But there have been at least seven in Algeria where people burned themselves to death. That's the level of frustration being reached around the world right now. And with events in Egypt as they are as of today, and I'm going to be presumptive and say that we are entering a post-Mubarak era in Egypt. The people in the world who have to be most afraid right now are the Saudi royal family. I have written much about Saudi Arabia in my book Crossing the Rubicon from the Wilderness, and certainly on CollapseNet. And Saudi Arabia possesses 25% of the known oil reserves on planet Earth. And it's a very unstable regime. It has been more brutal, I think, than the Mubarak regime has been for its 30-plus years in control in Egypt, or 30 years in control in Egypt. So we're entering a period of great instability, and that makes the things that we talk about all the more important. My guest tonight, Peter Joseph, is a filmmaker. I call him a young guy, but then I'm going to be 60 years old on Thursday, February 3rd. So pretty much everybody's young compared to me. But he's extremely well-educated, very articulate, and a very accomplished filmmaker. But he's also affiliated with an organization and a movement, Zeitgeist Venus Project, and we'll explain the difference to that in the course of this show, that is amazingly well-organized and effective. His newest film, just released recently, and I attended the premiere here in Los Angeles, about, what, 2 weeks ago now, I guess, maybe one, I don't know, time flies, was a simultaneous release in 60 countries and 30 languages. And as someone who has worked both in government and private business and throughout activism circles for decades, I have to absolutely tip my hat to any organization that can function with that degree of effectiveness. And Peter has a lot to say. I found him to be a very honorable guy, very clear-headed, very articulate. And Peter Joseph, welcome to the Lifeboat Hour.
Hey, thanks, Mike. I really appreciate that introduction, and I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so let's do a little basics, but because maybe not everybody listening is familiar, what's the difference between the Venus Project and Zeitgeist?
The Venus Project is the life work of Jacques Fresco and his affiliates, essentially technical data and investigation on how to make a more sustainable society and a sustainable culture. It's not just technical. He also is very much interested in human behavior and what makes people tick. Mm-hmm. And if you read any of his literature, he goes back and forth from technical attributes to both cultural attributes, values, and things that have to kind of go together. As you know, there's a culture lag as time moves forward.
Yes.
With new technological advents, and he addresses both of those very, very concretely. The Zeitgeist movement is what I call the activist arm of the Venus Project. And to make that a little more general, what we're trying to do is push forward some of these ideas, these sustainable ideas for what could be considered a sustainable culture. That's the phrase that I use, because you can have a sustainable, you know, city, but if the people don't know how to live in that city, if they're used to the values of the current culture with the conspicuous consumption, it's not going to work. So you have to go on both levels. So right now, the program of the Zeitgeist movement is to try and educate people on not only what's possible technically to create a sustainable society, but also what it means to live in a sustainable way. Because you really can't break the two apart. So that's a very general general summary for you.
How old are you, and where'd you go to school?
I'm 31 years old. I was born in North Carolina. I moved to New York after high school to attend a music conservatory. And after a few years of going into extreme amounts of debt, I decided that this isn't worth it. I was going to be a classical musician, a percussionist to be exact, which I still maintain as a hobby. It's personal, but I don't pursue it professionally anymore. And I started to get into video mainly because I had to get a job, of course. So I got into advertising, of all things, and I started to do video editing and pouring myself out to various agencies. And then finally I got to a point and I said, I'm going to make a project that I like. And since I have this new video editing skills, since originally I was a musician, now doing video, I put them together. And I made a project called Zeitgeist in 2007, which is a personal project. And it was free, shown downtown New York, and a bunch of people came. It was a catharsis for me. It wasn't something I intended to distribute whatsoever. In fact, the whole work was explicitly illegal, and I had no clearance for anything, which made it very difficult once it gained notoriety, but that's a whole other conversation.
One of the things that I think I picked up about you was that you had some exposure to the world of finance, economics, trading, or that.
Yes.
But what I'm curious about is because, you know, I've been very clear in telling all of my listeners, my fans, my readers, that nobody gets money as well as you and Zeitgeist do. I'm just so impressed with that. But how did you come to look into all that? Have you had any hands-on there?
Yeah, sure. That's another thing I don't usually bring up, but it's definitely relevant. At about 2004, I was in my normal slave job, and I said to myself, you know what, I got to get out of this. And being indoctrinated into this culture like anyone else, you become very self-serving. So I said, okay, what's the only occupation out there where I don't have a boss? And the answer to that is equity trading. So I spent many, many years as a private personal equity trader, scalping the morning markets, learning about the stock market, doing moderately well. I was able to do it part-time and go into my day job in the evening. And I slowly began to learn more and more about it. Like, what is this thing, the stock market? I mean, does it produce anything? What is the end goal socially? What does it provide? And then I began to start to get really bitter about what I began to see. And then, of course, the performance of the criminal organizations like Goldman Sachs and what these organizations tend to do and proliferate in the culture, then the people I would meet that were just so money hungry and the greed. And I became very disgusted with it, and then I began to learn about what money is, how the market system works, And what you saw in Zeitgeist Moving Forward is essentially a complete encapsulation of what my understanding is regarding the monetary system.
I think we're pretty much, you and I are pretty much in complete agreement. One of my trademark sayings is that until you change the way money works, you change nothing. And I see that clearly, and I see you as understanding that too. Why don't you talk on that for a minute or two?
Well, I divide the subject matter into the monetary system and the market system for the sake of a clear sense of communication. If anyone watches the film, that's how it's presented. And instead of using terms like capitalism and free market, and these terms have become so convoluted through time, it's hard to even get a definitive definition. So, you know, the monetary system, we'll start with that, is, it's a debt system. It's money's created out of debt. Interest is charged on it. And the systemic collapses that you're beginning to see around the world is, in part, a result of this basically 150-year pyramid scheme of constantly making more and more money across the world to cover debt, displaced debt. One very important point that people need to realize is that there is far more debt in existence than there is money. So bankruptcy and, well, inflation as well is a given in this system. We talk about these things like they're anomalies. They're not. You can't. Everyone's going to go bankrupt. It's a game of musical chairs,
right,
whether it's an individual or it's a corporation or it's a government. So that is intrinsically despotic and counter-human, and just the pressure and the stress generated by this abstraction known as debt is nothing but profoundly wrong if you want to have a humane society where people are trying to be collaborative. But then again, we have to remember what the society is. It's a competitive-based system. And what did Obama say when he goes in the State of Union address? We need to compete more, which is exactly the root of the problem.
Exactly.
As a quick aside, everything they're doing is exactly the opposite of what they need to be doing. It's like they're pouring gasoline on a fire, thinking they're going to put it out. They just keep making more and more money and pushing the wrong values. But so that's the market. Excuse me, the monetary system. The market system is a little new. Most people have degraded the monetary system, but they tend to accept the market system as though it's viable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I very much put into focus in the new film, because if you want a society, if you want sustainability, let's just use that word, and I consider that to be an empirical notion. There is no relativity to sustainability based on current understandings at the time.
Yes.
It will always change. It's emergent. But sustainability is sustainability, and you want to maximize sustainability based on the information you have at hand. With respect to the market system, everything that's made is intrinsically inferior the moment it's made because of the cost efficiency mechanism required. It's because of the market system that we don't have renewable energies in place right now,
mm-hmm.
because there's no way to navigate that process of investment and return and reach the sustainability protocols that would be required for a sustainable civilization. There's no money in it. So intrinsic obsolescence, planned obsolescence, people seem to believe, you know, the turnover of society is natural, like it's a natural deal where things break down in the pace that they do. That's nonsense.
Let me just break stride
here
for a minute. This is one of the areas that you covered so well in Zeitgeist Moving Forward, which is your third movie in the Zeitgeist series?
That's correct.
And how can people who haven't seen it, and I strongly recommend that they do, find the movie?
Oh, well, right now it's on YouTube. They just removed it off of their top views. It was number 3, beating out the State of the Union address, with about 15 to 20,000 views an hour. It's going extremely viral. So just go to YouTube or go to zeitgeistmovie.com, and you'll see a link to the YouTube clip. A full torrent is going to be available for download very, very soon. But it's freely available in very decent quality through YouTube right now.
Now, I think that there's one thing that I can safely say that you and I are in complete agreement about, is that whatever economic system emerges must be a resource-based economy. Am I correct there?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Why it's not like that today in some form just blows your mind when you put it into perspective how insane we are when we think about what is responsible for our livelihood, our survival, our health. And we've created this bizarre anomaly, strange, just distortion, economic structure that has no relationship to anything. It's what John McMurtry in the film, who is a very brilliant economist, by the way, a philosopher. I get a lot of my rhetoric from him these days because of how clearly he describes these nuances. And he calls it the life ground. Like, we've completely devoided the life ground. There's nothing relating to anything real anymore. It's the money sequence that people track with the GDP. You know, GDP doesn't represent anything except inefficiency.
Right.
The more GDP rises, the more problems there are, the more needs are being manufactured or created. So everything's asked backwards, to put it frankly.
We're coming up on our little segment in the show that we do every week where we play a song. You know, I'm in this band, New White Trash, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And I have watched some video of you working the vibes, and you got a really nice touch. I saw that. But New White Trash is a band that we started with Andy Kravitz, double Grammy winner, Andy Kravitz, Doug Lewis, here in Venice, California, and me, and we have 37 original songs on a new CD called Double Wide. Tonight we're going to play a song, because I always try to pick a song every week that kind of fits the show. Tonight we're going to play a song that has never been played on the show before. We have 37 originals, so we have plenty to go through. But this is a song that I co-wrote, sing some backgrounds on. It's called Realize the Lie. Let's have a listen.
Running with the dogs of war, we've run this race before. It's rotten to the core, when only war can save you. Internal war is evident. Oh, it all makes sense when every politician is paid to play. When only war can save you. Looks like your wedding day. Two kids raise a family. Oh my, what a price to pay. When only war can save you. Mash your face against the glass. Ease your load, you won't be back. You'll be dying of a heart attack. When only war can save you.
And you know it's true. And you know it's true. And you know it.
It's a lie, what you hear. End in sight is nowhere near. God rest your soul in fear. When only war can save you. Here at the edge of day, with the darkness coming around, everybody's leaving town, and only war can save you.
Can save you. Realize the lie. That's kind of what Zeitgeist Movement, Venus Project, Collapse Net, Transition US, Bob Waldrop's running on MT Groups, Post Carbon Institute, all of us clearly on one side of a line that we must make a transition to a post-infinite growth human paradigm. It's underway as we speak. The New White Trash, 37 original songs at www.newwhitetrash.com. If you'd like to hear more, you can download. You can listen to them all for free if you want to download them. That's $11.11 for 37 original songs. If you want to buy the CD, $22.22, and we have an upgraded 50 50-something dollar, I think it's $55.55, handcrafted, beautiful coffee table book edition of the CD, and that will make the people who get those co-producers on our next project. But you can find us there. Peter, how'd the song work for you?
Hey, very nice, as usual. I really appreciate the contour of what you guys are doing. I remember hearing your stuff from before, so let me know when you guys are playing out.
Appreciate it. Okay, so now let's go back, and boy, it's so important to have little breaks from the stress of all this.
Yeah, really.
To balance, that's why our standard song is Avalanche and Earthquake, which reminds us to play when we have the moment, because that's what gets you through the dark times. And these are dark times. Now, when you first, you came to my house to film me for Moving Forward. And thank you. I looked good, and I was pleased. I liked the whole film, but we had some talks before that, and I remember one of our first conversations where I said to you, having looked at a lot of Venus Project material of these cities that from an artist conception standpoint looked futuristic, like Disney's Futurama or whatever they call it, Futopia,
sure.
Whatever.
Right.
Used to look, and I remember saying to you, that's not what's coming next. I remember saying that, you know, this is what we're seeing now in Egypt and the civil unrest all over the world. We just had 11 police officers shot in a 24-hour period about a week ago in Los Angeles. That's what's coming next. Now, here we get to a place, and this is not where I fault Zeitgeist or Venus Project at all, because nobody has really closed the full loop about how we get from here to some future that we both pretty well see. And we're going to come back and talk about some of the other great strengths of the movie throughout the show. But what's your assessment about how to navigate the immediate challenges? I mean, I'm moving very clearly toward preparing the people who follow CollapseNet for the most immediate challenges, which are massive food price spikes, that's well underway, food shortages, civil unrest, and rising crime on the streets here. How do we deal with that?
Well, I completely agree with you as far as what's, quote, coming next. The transition period is a very uncertain period, which can go in many, many different directions, and it's very difficult to predict, though I think you do a very good job overall and have been. The Zeitgeist movement is a global movement with a global intent for everyone on the planet. It's not a kind of a regional thing where we're trying to get temporary protection. That's where you fall in and the people that you're working with fall in. The city systems are there to represent what's possible. Say, listen, mm-hmm. This is what we understand can happen. This is what a steady state economy could be, and this is what we can do. Is it utopianistic? I hate that word. It's ambitious, I'll say that, but it isn't out of reach. It isn't out of reach whatsoever. It simply depends on what people want. And if they understand what's possible, if they understand how efficient things can be, if they simply get the basic point of a resource-based economy, if anything, that we have to be based on resources. That's our physical referent. And we have to be strategically efficient throughout every single process that we orient when we recognize we live on a finite planet and we want to achieve maximum sustainability.
Of course, the other problem we have, though, is that today, as opposed to at the start of the oil age, there are 7 billion people on a planet that had only about a billion when we started using oil. And the needs then come to sustain as many of those as possible. And one thing that I picked up, maybe you can elaborate on this, and maybe it's an assumption that's not correct, but I kind of gathered that the research you had done on the, I'll call them the Jacques Fresco cities, are also done with a view towards sustaining the maximum number of people on the planet, because there's going to have to be certain very draconian efficiencies to sustain a population of 4 or 5 billion or 3 billion on the planet as the oil goes away, because there's 10 calories of hydrocarbon energy in every calorie of food. Do the Fresco cities, have you guys done any work to evaluate how many people can be sustained by those cities versus any other?
Yeah. Of course, he's done large statistical models as far as what it would work within a population of 50,000 to 500,000 people. And what you end up with ultimately are multiple cities. First of all, those that are familiar with the city should know that what's depicted in the circular city is simply an ideal. It's not some fixed thing. It's what underlies the city. It's how the city works and the systems approach to maintain efficiency. We're talking about energy reduction in these cities by at least 65% with sustaining the same amount of people. The problem is, I mean, the waste we see in our current society, which we take as normality, is so extravagant and so insane and doesn't have to be that way. When you walk down the streets of New York City in the summer and you have all these air conditioners dumping out heat, exhaust, which could easily be refunneled into creating more energy, you begin to see that the system, there's no system at all, basically. It's not a system. And that's the beauty of the Venus Project, is that when you put the systems approach into it, when you realize you can overcome intermittency of the renewables that we have, well, you can overcome the net energy problems that many see today, when you apply it in a systems theory, those things become resolved. So, yes, this is... It has been statistically outlined. If the problem is the paradigm shift, I mean, we have to change absolutely everything. Yes. You know that. I mean, food production, complete change. Absolute change from top to bottom, 100% revolution of how we organize everything. And I'm not going to tell you that I think it's something we can do tomorrow. Obviously, there's a gigantic cultural barrier, gigantic establishment barrier. And with the breakdown that's pending, the debt collapse, the drop of energy production that's pending, we have some very, very serious barriers. But I don't feel, and again, I don't berate anybody that's talking about transitions, and that's another subject that I'm learning more and more about to try and think about how to orient. But my goal is to show people what's possible and say, listen, we don't have to let this happen. And in the end, I want the system to be shut down before it gets that bad. What the Zeitgeist movement has proven is that we can create a global awareness. Our next day is Zeitgeist Day coming up in mid-March. And we've proven that we can create literally in almost every country, not almost every country, but many of the dominant countries that at least have access to the Internet. I mean, Africa is like long lost, you know. I mean, there's still the oppression there has kept them in the dark ages. But nevertheless, we can create a global awareness. And that awareness, I think, will start to be harnessed in a protest sense, where people step up and they begin to challenge the system across the world on a global scale. And that is sort of the next phase of the Zeitgeist movement.
Now, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour, and this is a pre-recorded show, by the way, in case you've just joined us. My guest tonight is Peter Joseph of the Zeitgeist movie, Moving Forward, and the Venus Project. We are pre-recording on February 28th for a show to air on February 6th, which is tonight. And now I'm just going to say we're going to break for a station break because that's what they have to do, and then we'll be right back.
Who's driving this train wreck? Yeah, we already know. Into the sunset of the fire's last glow. Shaken, bacon, freeze-dried, deep-fried, and caramelized, it all tastes the same. Turned out a bit like shaken, bacon, freeze-dried, deep-fried, and caramelized, it all tastes the same.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
State of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
Stephen Lindman hosts the Progressive Radio News Hour, Saturdays and Sundays, as well as currently on Thursdays, as an antidote to government and corporate propaganda on the most cutting-edge world and national topics. Distinguished guests are regularly featured to provide commentary and analysis impossible to the dominant media, offering biased, irresponsible misinformation and what Project Censor calls junk food news. The Progressive Radio News Hour airs Thursdays from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, as well as Saturdays and Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Make it a regular habit and stay informed.
The Progressive Radio Network, your premier progressive radio station.
Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour on February 6th, 2011. My guest is Peter Joseph, pre-recorded January 28th of 2011. Peter, you said something key right before the break, which is we need to pull the plug on this economic financial paradigm. This economic financial paradigm is something that is what makes it possible that even though there's milk in a dairy, and there's eggs and there's food, that those won't get delivered and will possibly get destroyed simply because of the way money works. I'm not saying that we don't have a resource situation. 7 billion, a population of 7 billion, is unsustainable, and our croplands have been largely destroyed. But at the moment, there is enough food to feed everybody. But we're seeing what money does, and I have reached my own conclusion over this over many years, and I've been very clear. This economic paradigm, this infinite gross beast, which is destroying human life now, will not be satisfied. It can't be satisfied until it's killed every one of us. So we need to pull the plug on it. That's the $64,000 question. How the heck do we do that?
Right. Well, it's going to take a critical mass. It's going to take critical mass, as far as I'm concerned, on a scale never before seen before. And I think when we consider the revolutions that have occurred in the past, without, say, the Internet, without the free flow of information that we enjoy today, at least for now, we see that it might be possible to do this. It might be possible to get enough people together where global awareness, where it breaches all borders, all nations, all races, all religions, because they all understand the breakdown. Mm-hmm. If we can get that information out there, people's self-interest, the interest for their kids to live in a decent world, will rise up. It's a natural thing. So my intent is to create absolute critical mass, and that is what everyone in the Zeitgeist movement is currently trying to do as fast as they can. And then certain actions would come up where we force our position. This movement will be called a terrorist organization. This movement will be given every name under the book. They already call it a cult in the media. They know about it. They understand it. And And but it's a holographic structure. There's no centralization. It's all about people understanding where we are and where we need to go and figuring out what to do to make sure the bottom doesn't completely fall out. The last thing you and I both want to see is more death and destruction.
Absolutely.
I would say that I think we can support the 7-8 billion people pending on this planet if the system moved appropriately into the right system. But we are going to see depopulation if this system is maintained. And that's just terrifying, I think, to all of us.
Yeah, I mean, as I look at the mechanics, I know I'm a practical guy. I was a street cop, and I came up in a very hands-on kind of life. And as I look at the mechanics of, number one, unplugging the infinite growth paradigm, and then getting to something else that's sustainable, that would still allow the food, if you will, to be delivered.
Right.
That would still allow the electricity to be provided for life support systems in a hospital, or electricity, or especially refrigeration.
Sure.
I'm still scratching my head for that, because if you just pull away right now, you're in New York City, I assume, and I'm in Los Angeles. If we want to go out and get some food to eat, we have no choice, almost, unless we're growing stuff in our backyard, everything. But to go out and spend money in the old system to get that food to eat today, you know, or tomorrow. And so what I've been doing is to advocate, first of all, disengagement from the current economic paradigm by all means possible. The first and foremost thing that needs to happen is to start growing food where you live. Down the road, that may not work if you're in a major metropolitan area and people discover that you're growing food and they have none and you have made no plans for how to protect that. But there are other ways to disengage from the system first. But it seems almost that we have to be building a parallel structure alongside the current one to get everybody from over the gunwale into the new boat.
Sure. No, I absolutely agree with that. There's no argument there whatsoever. People need to do whatever they can to protect themselves and their families, but they need to understand that it's obviously temporary and it's not a resolution in any kind of long-term
right.
sense, which is why I advocate the new structure that we do. The lifeboats, one thing actually I want to bring up that you might be interested in that I'm going to attempt to do in time is what I call a Z-bank, which, just to use the zeitgeist term, it's a time bank. Are you familiar with time banks, Mike?
Sure.
Banks are growing in America, even though theoretically they're illegal based on the IRS, because only the IRS in the U.S. Will basically tax any form of barter whatsoever, regardless. That's very, very difficult to track. In other countries, they do this because they don't have the same legal issues. But regardless, they're still doing it in the United States. I guess it's so under the surface, they're getting away with it. I have friends that have started these in New York and other places. And what I'd like to do, speaking of detaching from the system, is you begin to create a network. You have a programmer create a network of you start with a country and hopefully go global, and you create a time bank. And the beauty of this is bartering, an exchange of barter for services. And what you do is you're dropping interaction with the system. So you're going to start dropping GDP in circulation. The cyclical mm-hmm. consumption is going to dissipate. So you're helping people that don't have money, and simultaneously you're breaking down the system even more. It's a natural parallel. And that's something that I recommend to you, and something I'm going to be working on as a transition strategy.
One of the things that you did, I thought, brilliantly in moving forward, and I was sitting next to you, and I gave you a hand slap over this. You produced some statistical analysis. I don't know if it was yours or somebody else's. You'll tell us.
Sure.
Showing that in any society or civilization, whether in any part of the world and at any time in human history, there is just this amazing, well over 90% correlation between economic inequality and the level of violence in the society and culture. And, of course, what we all know is that, especially here in the United States, but also around the world, the richest 1%, if you will, are, as a result of the way the economic paradigm, the infinite paradigm, growth paradigm works, they're gradually accumulating all the quote-unquote wealth. I will use the word money, which may soon have very little value, but they're also aggregating, stocks of gold, supplies, arable land, and everything else. So talk about that research and how you did it, please.
Yeah, sure. It actually goes back many decades, but was compiled most efficiently by a man named Richard Wilkinson and Kate Pickett of the UK. These are professors of epidemiology, studying epidemiology and social disease, essentially, which is what this really is. It's a social pathology, as I describe as the title of the second part of the film denotes. And it's not just violence, which, by the way, if you want to read more about that specifically, you can look at the work of Harvard criminal psychologist James Gilligan, who headed the study for violence in America, and one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He's personally dealt with the most violent people our system produces, and I strongly recommend his work. But it's not just violence. It's mental disorders. It's neuroses. It's even things like teen birth rate, not to mention outrageous amounts of drug abuse correlations. The stress, it's called psychosocial stress. And when you live in a society that throws this in your face, when you say, oh, look at this person that has the Ferrari and the 50-room mansion, and then you sit in your kind of modest life, it has a natural gravitation for inferiority and shame and feeling your self-worth is lowered, as this system, of course, perpetuates explicitly. If you don't have a job, you probably heard about that poor girl that committed suicide because she had 300 job applications rejected. She was like 21. And her self-worth was so destroyed by this, because that's how we define self-worth in the system, that she actually committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And this is rampant. I mean, this isn't a singular case. So inequality produces aberrated consequences, both physiologically and emotionally, across the entire spectrum. And I encourage anyone to go to, I believe it's equalitytrust.uk, or search Richard Wilkinson, and you can read the works that they've written on this. And it's probably one of the most sourced and researched fields in social theory that's out there. It's so documented. It goes back extended periods. It's not just some whim. So we have to create equality in our societies if we want to have good health, if we want to reduce crime, if we want to reduce addiction. It's become a scientific reality. And what I love most, and I'll complete with this, is that the notion of innovation is officially debunked. More equal societies are more innovative. They have more patents. They are more creative. The United States is the lowest in just about everything now because of the great state of inequality that's been generated. Mm-hmm. And when you hear about all these random shootings, we've been hearing about in the media,
right,
you can really source this back to the state of economic inequality that distorts the underlying foundation of not meeting people's needs. Or, for example, a parent that's struggling, the parents that are, 50, 60 years ago, the wife could stay home and raise and nurture the child. No more.
No.
Now they all have to work because of this debt system that we have. And the stress of them has an indirect effect on the stress of their children, whether in utero or in infancy and childhood, and they create neuroses for that child from the very, very beginning because the needs are not being met across the entire spectrum of development. So it's this huge causal systemic problem that is far beyond just poverty. It's this gigantic stress machine that's messing all of us up on an extreme level.
And I could go on
many different tangents, but
And I think from a psychosocial, spiritual, emotional standpoint, pretending that everything is okay is going to break you faster than anything else. I mean, I'm a tough guy. I've been through a lot of stuff in my life, been a lot of places. And I have to tell you that I have to acknowledge, as I'm going through this today, when we're pre-recording on January 28th, is that I have to sit back and acknowledge that events in Egypt and the civil unrest and everything else that's happening in Europe, China, elsewhere, unnerves me from time to time, and I have to stop and deal with that. And that's why we need support groups. That's also why we need community as well. But the reason why I went into all that great research was because, I want to continue stressing to my listeners not only the imminence but the severity of civil unrest that is going that is upon us, and that will be getting much worse in the days and weeks and months and years to come. And then we come back to a place, and this is just the way my head works and chain of consciousness, is like, geez, there has to be some point at which there is a wedge large enough for those of us on the resource side of the line, on the line that realizes that we have to kill infinite growth. When does the window come for us to get either A, a foot in the door, or B, a seat at the table? A seat at the table is an interesting thing. the awakening that's been taking place over the last year and a half, especially that I've seen since the movie Collapse was released, is accelerating. So there is a change in consciousness taking place. But at what point and how do we, meaning all of us who understand that infinite growth has to go in a resource-based economy and with respect for this planet, when do we get a seat at the table and how might that happen?
Yeah, that's obviously a very complex question, and depends on who else is actually sitting at the table as well.
Right.
I firmly believe that the political establishment is going to be pushed to the side, just as the economic establishment
yes.
is. People are not only going to lose confidence in the system, but also their supposed leaders. So, my intent, again, is to create an awareness of on a global scale and, for lack of a better expression, lobby against all the governments in the world and all economic structures in the world with this subculture that says we're not going to play this game anymore. And whether it's a seat at the table or it's an entirely new table, one way or another, the change is going to emerge. I think we can both agree on that. Mm-hmm. One thing we do know for sure is that this system is not going to work, and it's just a matter of how much suffering and death is going to occur before people wake up and realize that. And all I can hope is that we can continue educating people and try to maintain our own sanity, as you point out, because you do want to go mad when you put all this together and then see the belligerence that's still existing in society and the ignorance. We have to do whatever we can to get that information out there, create critical mass, and then put pressure on the system through various strategic actions. And that's all I can really say, frankly.
Are you, meaning Zeitgeist Venus Project, are you doing anything with your membership, the people who follow you, to prepare them on temporal, immediate issues and events?
Well, we have awareness projects that occur a few times a year.
Right.
Again, I mentioned Zeitgeist Day. I'm not sure if this is the context you're referring to, but we have these gigantic awareness events we do every year, Zeitgeist Day in mid-March. The main event will be in London. I'll be there along with a lot of the main coordinators from around the world. But it's also duplicated throughout the world. So, for example, if anyone goes to zday2011.org, they can see what happened last year. 2010.org, you can see what happened last year, and we had, I believe, about 500 simultaneous events talking about the need for a resource-based economy in at least 60 countries. It was mm-hmm. bigger than the film release. And so that's what we do every year. That's one thing. The next thing, in a way, just as you pointed out, is we do need to talk about more immediate issues for people to kind of maintain their survival and sanity and to realize they shouldn't be going out and buying new automobiles or things like this. They need to start being more conservative on multiple levels. All the things that you talk about with the lifeboat orientation is, of course, very important, too. And that's something that I think that will be addressed in the main Zeitgeist Day event coming up in London as well. So we're getting there.
I'm going to do a little a short commercial we do once a show for CollapseNet, which is a site now that is becoming more popular around the world and much more in demand on a daily basis as events unfold. This is my site at www.collapsenet.com, where you find on our world news desk on a daily basis regular updates from around the world. And this is not just run-of-the-mill. This has been described by, and the testimonials are on the website, by many of our readers, some of whom are very influential people around the world in various positions, as the best one-stop place to go every day for news, information, and analysis. We pull and post through our own unique research probably between 60 and 80 stories a day on the World News Desk, and I make comments on them 6-7 days a week, with only a few rare exceptions. That's just one of the many benefits you get from membership. We also have an absolutely free Lighthouse directory of now more than 900 very specific entries that have to do with immediate issues, whether you want to grow your own food, whether you want to learn first aid, building community locally, all kinds of issues that have been recognized by people who have been studying the collapse of human industrial civilization for about a decade. You won't find these listings anywhere. Those are absolutely free. You also find at CollapseNet now, I think it's over 30 regional blogs, where you get breaking news. We now are upgrading the member-submitted news desk to member-submitted breaking news so that throughout the course of the day our members and I can post updates, and that's proven to be very useful with regard to events in Egypt recently. And we also have a proprietary software map that where our members, and this is good because recently I was on Facebook, and somebody, the lights were just coming on about the collapse of civilization, and this woman was terrified, and she said, "I don't know anybody, I don't know what to do." And the good thing about being a CollapseNet member is that we locate you on our proprietary software map, and other CollapseNet members around you, without disclosing their names or their addresses, appear immediately, so that if you need help and you're a member, these people are waiting by close by to give you a hand in an emergency. We're going to be redesigning and streamlining the site to make it much more user-friendly and faster. We know what services you want now. Those are going to become easier to find, and many people are now visiting the site 4 to 5 times a day. Membership is $100 a year, 27 cents a day. If you are, however, an active member of a transition initiative, there are 77 around the country. You can find them through transitionus.org. Your membership is only $50. It's a 50% discount. We'll figure out other ways maybe to administratively handle other discounts, but I certainly encourage all Zeitgeist members to check us out, because this is where you want to come to find out exactly what's going on, plus all the work we do, along with Transition US and all these other wonderful groups who get what's going on. And we want to share this information as quickly as possible. So you can find us at www.collapsenet.com, and Peter, you'll be getting a free membership.
Thank you.
for being a guest on the show, so you can get your daily intelligence brief like the rest of us.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're down to about the last 10 minutes. And what do you think when I say our, I'm talking all of us who are a part of this movement toward a resource-based economy and out of infinite growth, breaking the monetary paradigm. What do you think the most important things are we all need to be doing right now?
That's obviously a huge question. I think what you're doing is probably very, very relevant to that answer. I would just say, you know, it shouldn't be considered the end of the world in the sense if people can just start to refocus on what's possible and make the dedicated decision to move forward into what's possible. In other words, we know what we can do. We know what's possible. Mm-hmm. And if we just want to sit back and be apathetic, which a lot of people still are, and, you know, not do anything and not move towards a new system, or even in a lot of ways I see people, they don't have any faith in the transition into something actually positive. They think we have to go into a very, very low-fi, low-energy scenario, and they kind of just blindly don't think about what might be next after that transitional phase.
Yeah.
And I just want to encourage people to really think about the state of affairs technologically and what's actually possible. It's very disconcerting when I talk to people that become so down. They don't even want to think about solutions. They just want to think about ultimate self-protection. So that's about the only thing I would add. But between knowing what's possible and having the intermediary steps to take care of yourself, that balance is critical. So getting your lifeboats going, but also seeing that it's not the end of the world if the people come together and demand the change that's required. Then I think we'll reach a positive balance between the two.
I guess my experience has been, because I've lectured all over the world in 8 countries, and I've been doing this for a long time,
right. Is
that people hear what's technologically possible, and then their head kind of goes to a place, okay, well, it's already handled, I don't have to worry about it, without even beginning to try to comprehend the fact that the one thing that is preventing all of that stuff that is technologically possible from happening is the way money works.
Exactly.
You know, and the hypnosis, the collective hypnosis, is so great. It really is, in a way, like the movie The Matrix. And,
sure.
And I know that's frustrating for all of us who have been out here trying to lead this stuff. But again, necessity is the mother of invention, and we see even now as the global situation systemically deteriorates, is more and more people being willing to listen. What are you going to be doing next personally? What's your next effort?
The next effort is Zeitgeist Today, as I've mentioned. It's again, it's a big event, and we're hoping it's going to be even bigger this year. The release of the film was partially a fundraiser. I didn't see a penny from the global release. It all went towards the chapters of the Zeitgeist movement that were, you know, able to break even, which I think many of them actually did very well, because it really did sell out across Europe and much more popular than it was in the United States, naturally. Mm-hmm. And then Zeitgeist Day is going to be financed by that. And we just really hope that the press will pay attention. And to go back to what you just stated, the monetary system is, of course, the crutch of the issue at the very core. And that's why we spend so much time on it. In fact, in many ways, we spend more time on that these days than we do on the future ideas of the Venus Project.
Yeah, we've danced around this, and this just became clear to me. You said, I hope the press will pay attention.
Right.
And, you know, in terms of being able to change the monetary system, it seems to me that two things. One is the corporate-owned mainstream media, corporations which trade their shares, and commercial advertising, which also trade their shares on Wall Street. And commercial advertising is one of the greatest enemies of mankind, I think. We need to get them to acknowledge us, or to give us the microphone to make them see us, because they refuse to see. And there was something unfortunate that happened as a result of the tragic shooting in Tucson, Arizona, a few weeks ago, which is that it was revealed that the shooter, Jared Lee Loeffner, you know, had seen the Zeitgeist movie. And all of a sudden, it was pretty apparent to me, the way I read it, that Ashley Banfield, who I have no respect for as a journalist, you know, said, see, it was the Zeitgeist movie that, and then all these eyes were getting ready to focus on you from mainstream, but I haven't seen anything. Did they kind of say, oh, he's talking about stuff we don't dare talk about? How did that play for you?
Okay, well, I talked to many of them on the phone. I had numerous emails. I sent my response and offered both to have agents of the movement speak to them, because they bled the line. They didn't actually see the difference. And frankly, this was an attack on the movement, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, yes.
It wasn't an attack on the movie. Whoever made that decision, and by the way, that testimony was 2 years old. It was 2 years since the kid who said that had even seen Jared, so it was belligerent from that standpoint alone. But I spoke with many of them, and I think what happened, they expected to talk to some fringe, quote, conspiracy theorist, you know, that's going to talk about aliens or something. And when I presented who I am and what I talk about and the movement and what it's about and how the film came to be, they all of them seemed to just kind of nullify their interest.
All right, we're down to the last few seconds here.
So anyway, they didn't want to talk about it anymore.
Well, listen, I've had the same experience for almost 25 years now, is that they want to come paint me, but then as soon as they see that I'm articulate, have a book in the Harvard Business School library, and have accomplished many things as a journalist, we watch things changing. I got a special on the History Channel. It's going to be running for a while. We are running out of time. Peter Joseph of the Zeitgeist and Venus Project, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on our show. The film is Zeitgeist Moving Forward, which you can find easily on the Internet. It's a great piece of work. It's a way of rounding things out, and it's also a way of telling all of us out here listening who believe that infinite growth is going to kill us, that we are nowhere near as alone as we thought we had been. Peter, I just want to thank you so much for being with us, and I'll look forward to having you back on the Lifeboat Hour.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate it and have a great deal of respect for what you're doing as well. So,
Thank you, Peter. Listen, our guest next week will be the long-lost Cynthia McKinney, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. We're going to pre-record that because I'll still be up at Tom Brown's Standard Course in Santa Cruz, California, so I get a couple weeks away from the show. But Cynthia McKinney's going to be with us next. Also coming up, James Howard Kunstler and some really big guests. As you see, we've been having the people who understand what's going on this show. We will see you back next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night.